Welcome back. Today, I am joined by Clark Hickerson. Clark is a longtime friend of mine. I've known him for almost his whole life in a way. And in 2020, Clark attempted suicide on October 10th. He survived. And since that day in 2020, October 10th, he has been battling to recover physically and mentally. There's been a lot of physical and mental challenges along the way, but he is on today to tell his story. And his story, I have a lot of love and respect for him telling his story with the hopes to inspire and educate people that might be struggling or people that just need to better understand what people go through. And on October 10th of this year, 3 years to the day of his first attempt, Clark founded and launched the Comeback Story Foundation. It's really cool, and it's a really unique foundation, which there's plenty of foundations and organizations and nonprofits for their survivors of suicide, individuals that had a family member or loved one commit suicide, and then there's plenty of organizations for suicide prevention. But what is unique about the Comeback Story Foundation is it provides the resources, the support, the rehabilitation for individuals like Clark that have attempted suicide, but they survived. And we think this number is exponentially greater than what we know, because a lot of people that attempt suicide and survive, they might not tell each other. They might not tell their loved ones. They might be embarrassed to reach out for help. So Clark's on a mission to help provide these resources, these tools that these individuals can use, because we know there's more and more out there that have survived their suicide attempt. I have the link in the show notes to donate to his organization. Just like any nonprofit, they are new. He is trying to get it off the ground. So all the donations help. And if you have any resources, feel free to reach out to Clark. If you have any stories, or you have, if you have a story that you might want to tell of an attempt that you might have done and survived, reach out to Clark. All this sort of stuff is incredible for other people to hear and to get his organization off the ground. It's a very powerful conversation with Clark today. And like I said, I just get a lot of love and respect for him using his story to help motivate and help educate those that need it. So another organization that I love that also I need to link up with Clark is Spinks. Spinks is what we know, most people know, is a local convenience store. They have great food. They have great fried chicken. They have, you know, big, bright, clean gas stations. They have great car washes. And what people might not know is if you see a Spinks in your community, that means they're investing in their community. For 50 years now, they have invested millions and millions of dollars each year into their communities. Incredible organizations like the March of Dimes, maybe the Comeback Story Foundation. But all I ask is if you see Spinks, stop in, support your local Spinks, because I can guarantee you they are supporting the communities they're in. Their link is in the show notes, so you can find the location nearest you. But just use them for your gas, use them for your convenience store stops, anything like that, just to support your local Spinks. As we're getting into the holiday season, we're going to all these events, and I'm sure alcohol is flowing. And I know if you're like me growing up, I felt like I needed to have an alcoholic drink in my hand to fit in at a lot of these events, Christmas parties. But Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to change that. Rebel Rabbit is alcohol-free. They are infused with Delta-9 THC, so you can have a good time, you can have a drink in your hand, you can get a little bit of a buzz, but all the negative side effects that come along with drinking alcohol do not come with Rebel Rabbit seltzers. So you're going to get a great night's sleep, you're going to be able to wake up refreshed, you'll be able to be productive in the days following. And if they are racking up the retailers all over the country, but you can also get it delivered directly to your doorstep. If you go to the link in the show notes, it'll take you directly to my promo code, so you'll get 20% off. If you need to enter the promo code, that promo code is LIFE20 to get 20% off. They have a couple levels of THC levels. They have some incredible flavors. So whether you're sitting back watching a game on a Sunday or Saturday or getting getting home from work, this Rebel Rabbit Seltzer could be the perfect alternative to alcohol for you. They've really changed the game. They're on an incredible mission to socialize smarter and healthier. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Clark Hickerson. Clark, what's up? First off, thank you for coming up to Greenville to join me. How was the drive? How you doing?
It was good. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I drove up from Charleston this morning. So just excited to be here. Yeah.
I saw you recently added something to your resume, and I don't know if you'll ever do it again, but you're the reverend for your sister's wedding. How did that go?
Yeah, retired reverend. That was it was definitely something I didn't expect to do, but she asked me to do it, and it was, it ultimately was something really special for her and I to share, and of course her husband. It was really cool just officiating my sister's wedding. But I think she's probably the only person that can get me to do that.
So. I'm telling you right now, I don't know if I would be able to do it. I had a friend or somebody I look up to officiate our wedding, and he's like 65 years old, and he was even nervous. So yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was. They said they were going to do like this prompt, and the whole week I still had not seen that prompt, and so I kind of took matters into my own hands, and we had some doozies at the rehearsal, but ultimately they got married. And I think we clocked it at about 11 minutes. So it was probably the quickest ceremony ever. And that was what you wanted. So, yeah.
Hey, that's how I wanted mine too. It's wild to think, right? Like just a few weeks ago, you were officiating your sister's wedding.
Yeah.
3 years ago, you probably thought that maybe would have never happened.
Yeah. I mean, this was, every day, since 2020 is kind of, it's a day where anything that happens, there was a chance that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
That being a very big and, particularly special one.
Yeah. And you think about that too, like as you move forward and you progress and you just like get more educated, like the things that you can accomplish throughout life, even through the things that you have gone through. I'm interested to know, going back to maybe like even your teenage years or, a couple years ago, how were your feelings around anxiety? Like how were your feelings around depression? And like, what were you physically feeling and going through that eventually will lead up to October 2020 that we'll talk about?
Yeah. So, I've always been an anxious person. But it was more geared towards like school and academics. And I just, classic case of just, generalized anxiety coming up on or for it with a test or, starting a new school year. But, it really, the severity of it all kind of came to light, I would say, probably in college. I was at Furman. I was basically their pre-med minor, and then I was a political science major, and there was a sophomore year I was taking, if anyone's taken organic chemistry they can understand, but I was taking organic political analysis, physics, and then some other course, and it just kind of came to a head, and I got out of a 6-hour organic chemistry test, and then I was having to go study for a physics test, and I kind of had a breakdown, and I chalked it up as like, oh yeah, that happens, like just wave of emotion, whatever. But then I get into the real world, and it's not only am I responsible for myself, I get engaged, and I buy a house, I start taking on new responsibilities at work, and feels like overnight, things just pile up. And when things kind of came to a head, it was 2020. Just to give you a little background, basically the world shut down on my birthday, actually March 17th, 2020, turned 24, and I mean everything came to a screeching halt. And surprisingly enough, I wasn't really anxious during that time. You know, I was worried and everything, but I was optimistic that it was going to happen. You know, I've always had this idea that, you know, there's certain things, like whether it's a war or, you know, natural disaster or something like that, there are things I can do, but ultimately it's not in my hands. And the world keeps moving forward if everyone in the right position keeps moving forward. And so, you know, spring of 2020, you know, got through COVID. The store that I work at was closed for 6 weeks. I stayed busy. You know, looking back, I tend to keep busy just so I don't let the anxiety and stuff, you know, kind of sink in. And then, you know, just like that, the store, I'd been promoted to one of the main buyers, at 24 years old. And unfortunately, you know, that whole market season in May and June, actually all the way through till August, we were buying for spring 21, and it was all over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And that's like shopping online, but spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, it got to me, and I never was confident in really what I was doing. I thought that I was too young to be doing it, and I just powered through it. And really, when the anxiety kind of took a hold on me was when the buying season was over and we were starting to get busier with selling, you know, people were shopping again. I kind of lost my selling edge. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I knew I was good at. And I lost my confidence. And so the confidence that I had just started slipping away in like all aspects of life. And, you know, I started seeing a therapist, and, you know, I had one initial like meeting, and she was kind of confident, hopeful. And then that following week, I remember I can't quite remember what exactly happened. It just kind of had gotten worse. And I broke down over Zoom with her, and she told me, she said up front, she's like, I can help you with your mode of thinking, but you need some more help in the sense of medication. And that's what she alluded to. And so, you know, saw a psychiatrist. That was a whole nother debacle.
During that time.
I had it was over Zoom, and I just, because of like, I was second guessing myself for that, like those past 4 months. And so I had it in my head that I'd screwed up the appointment, and like I was supposed to be at a doctor's office because I never got like the Zoom link. And he ended up calling me, like FaceTiming me while I'm driving to his office. And I'm like, can I just get home and talk to you where I'm like not driving? He's like, no, we can do it right here. And I was like, no, I need to get home. And I had a 15-minute conversation, and he said I had generalized anxiety and prescribed me with, you know, two medications. One was to help me sleep. Trazodone is very common. It's an old antidepressant. Someone reminded me of the other day.
I've been prescribed Trazodone.
Yeah, I mean, it's common. You know, and then I was prescribed sertraline, which is basically Zoloft. And you know, it's always hindsight's 2020. Probably should have tried to just get some sleep first. But yeah, I mean, that was on a Tuesday, and then that following Saturday, I just kind of remembered leaving my house.
FedEx running, right?
Yeah, so I had a Saturday delivery for a jacket. I mean, it's comical, like, thinking about it now.
But, dude, I'm telling you, I think, like, that sort of stuff, even though it's comical now, like, that's what people beat themselves up.
Yeah.
Internally.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was Saturday delivery. I was at work when they came to the door, but I was literally trying to psych myself out to go into work in the parking garage. And I showed up 2 minutes after they knocked on the door. And honestly, I've tried to replay it in my head over and over. I've tried to put myself back in that situation. And I can only remember walking into work, and then I do remember walking upstairs, but that was kind of common because our offices are up there. But I do not remember anything until later on remembering kind of being flat on my back.
Leading up to this, was this in your thought process the first time you've thought about suicide or like this sort of situation had happened, or had you had any previous thoughts about it?
Yeah, I was getting asked that a lot, you know, when I woke up in the hospital and then prior to the attempt. And I guess I tried to convince myself that the thoughts that I had were more like idealistic, like in the sense of like, what if, kind of, not so much as like, hey, I'm going to do it this way. You know, I can say this now, but you know, a couple weeks or a week prior, I had been up on the roof, but something had brought me down each time. I had not done it consciously. And that's what, you know, that first attempt, I still stand by the medication having an effect, but I know that the thoughts were there in my head and I didn't necessarily acknowledge them as I should. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of that stuff can heighten certain aspects. I mean, there's a reason why they say, or have you had thoughts of suicide when they're prescribing this medication? And I said I hadn't, but I wasn't necessarily honest about how like present that thought was. And so, you know, you learn from that. You know, I honesty is always the best policy, and
you know, it's hard to, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
like coming to realization with yourself, like you might be having those thoughts, you know, that's super scary.
Yeah. I mean, I always, you know, I just always kind of had this mentality that like I'd start feeling better.
Yeah.
Like it would just get better. If I just kept working at it and kind of, you know, kept shoving it under the rug, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, at a certain point, there's always so much shoving under the rug you can do. So.
And then, you know, October 10th does happen. And like you said, you don't remember basically anything except for going upstairs. And next thing you know, you're laying on the street.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what happened when people started to find you. Like, how did you realize, like, kind of what happened? When did it kind of set in, like, you know, that you jumped from?
So, you know, I when I woke up in the hospital, I didn't remember much. And then things started to come back. And so I was actually afraid that, like, and a lot of people were afraid that memory of what actually did happen would come back to me, and it still hasn't. But what now, you know, 3 years later, I remember laying on my back, looking up at the sky, not really hearing anything, just knowing that something happened in between, because I knew where I had been, and I kind of had an idea of where I was. Like, I could recognize that the store was there. And the next thing I knew, I just heard sirens. You know, I still kind of, my heart kind of starts beating pretty fast whenever I hear like diesel trucks, because like that's a sound that registers from that day. I remember trying to get up and like it feeling like I was being held down.
Yeah.
I actually had a store owner behind us confirm that I was trying to get up, and she said that I had a cable that was wrapped around my leg, or actually my whole body, and that power line was actually what, you know, slowed me down. Mm-hmm. And she said that I was trying to move and get up, and she didn't know how I would register seeing someone like that I knew, mm-hmm. like if it would like frighten me or something like that. And so there was this guy walking by, and she just stopped him and said, "Can you please tell him to stop moving? His name is Clark." And I don't remember hearing that.
Yeah.
And you know, another thing that I remember is, you know, I remember being wheeled into the emergency trauma room. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the doors and the lights, and it's crazy because in February of 23, I had to go to the emergency room for a elbow surgery that got infected. And I was, they took me into this room because they were out of other rooms. And I remembered that place. I asked them, I was like, if someone was in this trauma, you know, would they come here? And one of the nurses walked by who I didn't know. And she was like, yeah, you were here. I remember you were right there. So it was just kind of like, it's like situational awareness, like, you know, kind of sparks a memory.
It's like when somebody hears a song that
maybe
heard when they were a baby or something.
Right. And so it's just, you know, I can still, you know, I mean, I walk into that building every day. And, you know, when it's kind of like a chilly, like sunny day, like I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember the day being like that. And so it just kind of, you know, wouldn't say it sends this chill up your spine or anything like that, but it just kind of
it's like a reminder.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's for the first 2 years going back to that store was a little tough because, you know, where I parked, the handicapped spot's literally right, almost right where I was laying in the street. And so it was just always kind of like the roof was this shadow, that kind of just cast itself over my days. But I was determined to go back to work because, you know, I stood by this as much as, you know, everyone in my family and friends were against it. You know, they didn't want me to go back to work there. And I just told them, I was like, I'm not letting what happened that day define my time with a job that I actually have enjoyed and I'm actually very good at. And so like, you know, it's one of those things. Will I be at that store forever? No, but I'm certainly not going to leave on that note.
Sure.
So
you're going to leave on your own terms.
Yeah.
Do they think you don't remember because of like a concussion or an injury or because of the trauma or just like your headspace at that time?
I don't think it's because of a head injury. Because my left elbow, I mean, it could be. They've never quite. I mean, the team of doctors I had when I was in the hospital, they kind of always thought that it was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, I haven't seen that team of doctors in a while now just because they're, you know, trauma surgeons.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my left elbow took the brunt of my blow. Mm-hmm. My left elbow is like a jigsaw puzzle. And it's what probably saved me from hitting my head. I've had a few people say that they think that it's probably like your body, kind of like a defense mechanism.
Some of those trauma situations, they like, you won't remember.
You won't remember. Yeah. And so, I don't know. I don't know if it'll ever come back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it doesn't necessarily scare me if it does. You know, I feel like now, 3 years later, I have tools to help with something like that, but I don't know why I can't remember that.
I think by the grace of God and by people around you, you survive and you end up in the hospital. And but at this time, I mean, a lot of times this is where maybe the hardest work comes to play.
Yeah,
you have multiple injuries, you have tons of surgeries, you're in a coma. Talk me through, I guess, the injuries and then kind of your plan to get back healthy.
Yeah, so,
and I say that too, I mean, physically and mentally healthy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll talk about the physical part, because that was like, unfortunately, what I dealt with first, and I kind of paid the price on that one. But, you know, I woke up in the hospital, not knowing what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom was next to me. My fiance was not there. And I remember asking where she was, and she had been out like voting. She was doing early voting. But I knew that her birthday fell on election day. And so when she walked in, she's wearing a I voted sticker. And I like wrote on my whiteboard, happy birthday. And it was like October 30th. Her birthday was the 3rd. And so like I registered that kind of my head was still there. And I think that was probably comforting to other people that like I still had a pretty good headspace.
Because
that was, you know, I mean, I had I was in a coma for so long that it know you. You never know how someone's going to be until they actually wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was there. I had both legs in a cast. I had my left arm in a cast. I was trached. I had a feeding tube. I had a lot of like bandages around my stomach and everything. My right arm was the only thing that was like, maybe nothing happened. I had still had full function in my hand. And so I just kind of remember like sitting there and like told my mom we needed to pay the mortgage because it was the 30th and not registered to me. And then, you know, kind of when I got my bearings a little bit, I asked my mom what happened. And she told me, and I had it in my head. Like, I had a dream when I was in a coma that, like, I was walking with a coworker and I just slipped off and got hit by a car. Like, that's what I thought happened.
Dang.
And she told me what happened, and it was just kind of it was a realization, like, wow, like, I actually did it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, that's exactly the thought I had, but I didn't think I'd ever do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I actually got out of the hospital yesterday or today, 3 years ago. I was in the hospital for 48 days. I was in the ICU for 36, and then the step down unit for another 12. And, you know, basically I was released from the hospital and I was non-ambulatory for three of my limbs.
Mm-hmm.
My house is two stories. I had a hospital bed in my living room. I had to be like lifted with this like crane basically if I wanted to move to like a reclining chair. You know, otherwise, like, if I had to go anywhere, it was like I was going to have to call an ambulance.
Yeah.
We couldn't get me in the car. We ultimately managed how to do it. Thank you to my mom and her husband. But yeah, so, you know, I was in a wheelchair, you know, kind of full time till about April. I'd been...
What was that, like 5 months?
Yeah. Yeah, roughly 5 months. I had been to inpatient... physical rehab, and then I was doing outpatient and through the hospital, and then my insurance ran out because you're only allotted so many like physical therapy sessions, and so mine ran out, and because it was the hospital, they have to charge like self-pay people what they charge insurance companies, so it was gonna be like $500. And so I had a friend who owned a PT office, and I reached out to him, and he went and evaluated me. I was still in the wheelchair, and he's like, all right, I'm going to get you into a walker in about a week, and then shortly after that, I'm going to put you on a cane. And I was like, I literally had no idea how he was going to do that because I had just gotten, like, all my bandages and everything off my leg. And, about, like... I think June was when I started to drive myself to work and...
With a cane at this point?
With a cane, yep. I ended up leaving my wheelchair at the store because I would just basically drive to the store, get in the wheelchair, and like kind of wheel around the store because, I mean, we'd get so busy that like I'd get knocked over. And so it was kind of like a blockade. Like I kind of used it to box people out. And then... I think in August was when I started back, July or August, I started back full-time at work, and I quit using the wheelchair.
Dang.
And so I was going to, you know, PT every week. I don't have feeling, I don't have much feeling in my left leg. I can't pitch my left foot up and down, so I have to wear a brace mm-hmm. that basically keeps it up. That's the biggest setback, I would say, in the sense of, the physical aspect.
I see you dance now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have as good as footwork as I used to, but I still manage somehow. But yeah, I mean, I've had at this point three or four surgeries on my left elbow, trying to get full range of motion back, and just can't get it. The last surgery led to like four hospital stints due to an infection, and so I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna take a break from surgery for a little bit. But I mean,
you look great now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all your body kind of compensates for all the things that you can't do, or the parts that don't work as well. So I mean, my right side of my body is pretty jacked, but my left side is just kind of you know, sits there. But I mean, all in all, you know, I'll take, you know, I would, thankfully I'm not, but I mean, if it meant, you know, still being where I am today, like I'd be in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And you know, it's there's a lot of things could have not happened that would not help me be here today.
Sure. When did you start working on your mind, on the mental part of it?
So, you know, I was visited when I was in the ICU. I was visited by the psychiatric team for a couple weeks, and they kind of kept an eye on me, but they basically confirmed that it was due to medication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how that is, I don't know, but that was it. I mean, after that, it was just basically making sure that I could get out.
Yeah.
And I started working on my, like, physical recovery because, you know, all the anxiety that I felt prior to the attempt, it was like I had just gotten a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And I thought I was fine. Mm-hmm. I was happy, thankful that, like, I was still here,
mm-hmm.
Hopeful for the future, you know, making sure that I was going to get back. You know, I was motivated by somewhat financial responsibilities. You know, I had to get back to work. I was, you know, we had just rescheduled our wedding date. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I thought my mind was fine.
Yeah.
And then in February of 22, I was on my bachelor party, and I had a breakdown. I don't know what triggered it, but, you know, maybe probably alcohol driven, but I wasn't on any medication at that time. But yeah, I you know, the only thing that could have possibly been a trigger is we were jumping off this kind of like high dock, and I had it in my head that, like, you know, I was going to do it because I can push off my right leg. And I don't know if that was kind of the first time I'd ever taken a jump,
mm-hmm.
Of any height. And so I don't know if that triggered something, you know, kind of like how we were talking about, like, putting you back in.
Very well could have.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, I had some family stuff going on, and I came back from my bachelor party after, you know, a whole Saturday of just like being like, I thought I was just hungover,
yeah.
But I just couldn't get my spirit up, and came home. I was off, like the day after I got back, and, you know, my then fiance was out of town. She was about starting a new job. And so I called my mom, and I just said it. I said it was happening again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was aware of the mindset or the feelings that I was having or was about to get to.
Yeah.
And it scared me. And, so, you know, naturally you always call your mom when things get really tough, you call your mom. And yeah, she came, and, you know, ultimately the next day on a Tuesday, I told her that I was suicidal, and, I couldn't explain why.
You were on no medication this
point. No medication.
Yeah.
And so then for the next next 3 months, I was pretty, I mean, my psychiatrist says now that I was in a psychosis when she first met me. I couldn't speak. I mean, I could understand what people were saying, but I couldn't form a sentence. Yeah. I tried to go into work because I was like, this is happening again. I'm definitely going to get fired. And I kept trying to go to work. And, you know, it took until a few days after my birthday, probably like the 19th of March, where I ended up back on the roof. And I was very much about to do it. And I looked down and I saw the shoe print that I left the first attempt. And, you know, it's crazy how, despite all the weather and fading and everything, that just, it's like it's just painted there. Mm-hmm. And I ultimately came down and told my mom and her husband what happened. And I took a step back from work. And, you know, I ultimately was prescribed a medication that is an anti-suicide drug. And I just had to get the thoughts out of my head before I could start, you know, healing. And I started to turn a corner in May, I would say. And I was still trying to have to dig my way out. And then,
May of 22.
Yeah. Yeah. We canceled the wedding. So that also didn't happen. And you know, I just had to focus on myself. And, I would say that 22 was probably, actually it was definitely a harder recovery than my physical recovery of 21.
Mm-hmm.
I had to come to the realization, that, you know, I have a condition.
Yeah.
I deal with something. It's not necessarily my fault,
mm-hmm.
but
don't be ashamed of it.
Yeah. But, you know, I can ultimately either define the condition or let it define me. And, you know, once I got to the point where I wanted to help myself, it was kind of a breeze from there on out. I mean,
almost like accepting it, or
just, I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Be here anymore in spring of 22. And once I got to the point of like, okay, you know, you could end up way worse than you were in 20, or you could just not be here. And what's that going to solve for anyone you know and love? And so I just finally kind of came to the conclusion that like, I want to be here. Mm-hmm. I want to figure it out.
Rebel Rabbit is on a mission to provide a healthier and smarter way to socialize and drink. Their alcohol-free, cannabis-infused seltzers are perfect for anybody just trying to kick back and relax after a hard day at work or on the golf course with your friends or hanging out at a party and you want to wake up and feel better the next day. Their seltzers are perfect for you. They are a great alternative to alcohol as well. Their website is drinkrebelrabbit.com. Use promo code LIFE20. You'll get 20% off your order. That link is in the show notes. But join the mission and start drinking and socializing smarter with Rebel Rabbit Seltzers.
Who was some of the support system you had around you at this point? I know you talked about your mom a lot.
Yeah. I would say I had 22 is hard because there were a lot of people that were trying to help, whether it be friends and like, you know, my best friend would text me all the time. You know, my fiance at the time was trying to help. And the hardest thing was, is like, I saw my life slipping away from me. Like I saw myself pushing people away.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, because of the suicidal thoughts in my head, I couldn't do anything about it. Like it was literally like someone had sewn my mouth shut. And so my fiance was there for all of the physical recovery. You know, not no fiance should be a primary caregiver before you get married. But you know, she was there for that. She was there in 22. But you know, it's just, it's hard on anyone. And so my mom and her husband were there with me every day. They moved in and, you know, they talked me through it. They did everything they could. And I mean, some days I sat on the couch and I'd go in and out of taking naps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a psychiatrist, tell us that my brain had experienced a trauma and it needs rest. And so she validated that if all I want to do is sit and lay, then that is what I should do. And I hated that because I am not one to just like sit around and do nothing. I cannot chill. Like I've got to keep moving. And so it was like,
that makes things a lot worse for me.
Like, yeah.
On time for me is not good.
Yeah. And so I just, yeah, after that, my mom actually asked me, because there was one night where my psychiatrist was like, so you can either take Lamictal or lithium. And I said, what's the difference? And she said, well, lithium's an anti-suicide drug. And I said, let's go with that. And I got off the phone after she spoke to my mom, and she was like, why did you choose that one? And I was like, I got to get these thoughts out of my head. I was like, I literally wake up every day just hoping that like something's going to happen. Like, you know, whether I'm going to have the quote unquote courage to do it, or, you know, I'm just, something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, until that gets out of my head, I'm worthless. And so that was a tipping point in my like mental recovery.
Very cool.
So,
and what was it? Were you also like doing work with a therapist and just like talking through the feelings? And
yeah, so I had I tried a new therapist, didn't like her, and I actually went back to the therapist that I had like all through, like post attempt and the two appointments that I had before my attempt,
mm-hmm.
because I hated explaining it over and over, like what happened. And she had known it the whole time. I mean, she had been through it. And so I made the decision to try out a new therapist. And then I just realized that she was the one that could help me the most. So I was seeing her, and then I was seeing a psychiatrist, who, you know, I have two trauma surgeons that I think like every single day. The only reason I'm here is because of these two women, and they helped me with my physical like presence. And my psychiatrist is the one person I thank for my mental, her and my therapist. I mean, those two sets are like the only reason I'm here today. So they're awesome. And, you know, my psychiatrist, she told me once, she was like, you realize it took you 3 months before you called me by my name? And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, you wouldn't look at me. She was like, you were like afraid, like you were threatened. And so you just wouldn't acknowledge me. She was like, when you finally said my name, I told my boss, I got him. So I was like, oh, okay.
Makes sense.
So, yeah.
What do you do now, like on a daily basis, to maintain your recovery?
Yeah. I mean, it's some days are better than others. I mean, I certainly don't have all the answers. I see my therapist once a week. I still am on the same medication. And, you know, it's just the mindset changes every single day because, you know, every day is different. But, you know, some days I deal with, you know, physical soreness, and, you know, it's just kind of like dreading getting up and like just not know if you can do it. And I've never really it has to take a lot for me to like rest my body. And so I just keep pushing forward. But on the mental side of things, it's just, I take into account that, like, one, work isn't everything. And I found that when I put less pressure on myself at work, I actually do better at work. It's a very interesting realization. And I just, you know, when I start to enjoy, like, life for what it has to offer, you know, this is a second chance for me on life. And I think it's very unfair to others if I kind of squander it.
When did the idea for the Comeback Story Foundation pop into your head? Or tell me to the story.
Yeah. So, you know, I always had, it's kind of I hear it all the time, and I don't ever, like, take it lightly. But, you know, when people following the first attempt would see me or come across me, they'd say, you know, you're here for a reason. And I would acknowledge it because I do. I know I'm here for a reason. You know, science only took me so far. Mm-hmm. And, but I would always, or typically I would always say, I know I'm here for a reason. I just don't know what it is yet. And so, you know, even with all the setbacks, I've always been trying to figure out what, like, why I'm here. Yeah. And, you know, the Comeback Story Foundation, I don't know if that's why I'm here, but I figured it was a good start. And back in March of 23, someone close to me had an attempt. And I found out a few days following, and I was a little angry at myself because I felt like I had kept my story to too small of a group. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, not to take anything away from that attempt, from that person, but I felt like I could have done more, mm-hmm, as their friend. And so I literally went to bed that night, woke up the next morning before traveling to see them, and I sat on my bed and I was just like, I'm going to start a charity. So I literally typed in how to start a charity. And one of the first thing was, you got to come up with a list of goals. And so I sat there and typed up a few goals, got dressed, hopped in the car, and the whole way to my destination, I was making phone calls to lawyer friends, clients, and, you know, financial people, and just trying to get a grasp of how I could do this. And so I had the idea. I unfortunately did it. I kind of drug my feet a little bit. And then in August, I had a plan to launch it in October. And in August, I was like, oh, I've got to get on this. And so I had a lot of people, a lot of friends and new friends step up to help me out with it. And, you know, we ultimately launched this foundation on the third anniversary of my first attempt. So
talk to me the uniqueness of the foundation, because we were talking before we started recording, there's, you know, there's foundations and resources for suicide survivals and survivors in a way, but sometimes that's like the families, it's not the individuals. It's for prevention, which this could also be for prevention, but this is also unique in a different way. Talk me through that.
Yeah, so part of the things I was actually, like, researching in the days that followed my, like, initial idea, was I was trying to see if there was something that I could piggyback off of that dealt specifically with those who had attempted but not completed, mm-hmm, and kind of had to go about their lives with, you know, that kind of knowledge and, yep, you know, experience. And I couldn't find anything. You know, the definition of a suicide survivor is actually two-part. One part deals with friends and families who have lost someone to a suicide attempt, and the other part deals with the actual person who attempted. Mm-hmm. Well, when you go on to suicidesurvivors.org, not to discount that website, but it deals with the family and the friends. And so in my research, there has not been something that deals with, you know, the aftermath.
Mm-hmm. For the individual.
For the individual, you know, do they still have a job? What are their physical limitations? You know, what financial struggles are they not going to deal with? Mm-hmm. And, you know, more importantly, what's their mental capacity after something like that? And so that's the, you know, main goal is to just, you know, I know that there are others out there that have dealt with a similar experience, whether it's first, second, third. But, you know, what I've found is like, what I feel, my opinion, is if you attempt and not something of like a physical or physical situation where it like, where it becomes known, are you really telling someone about it? And so I just feel like, you know, I'm an open book when I come to my story because honestly, like I work retail and you will never be like, I will never be surprised at what someone can ask, whether it be, why am I limping? why was I trached? Something like that. And so like, you know, you get to a point where people ask and you kind of tell them, you know, the light version of it. And then they keep asking and I tell them because, you know, if you want to know that much, then I'll tell you. It's not going to affect me. Because I wouldn't be doing this if I couldn't talk about it.
Engineered Sleep makes the best mattresses out there. Sleep is the number one thing you can focus on right now to better your performance on a daily basis. And you might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. Like I said, their products are the best and their customer service is second to none. Their website is engineeredsleep.com. If you use promo code LIVE15, you'll get 15% off your order. So if you or someone you know is looking for a new mattress, reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep and they'll hook you up. Again, their website is engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE15 to get 15% off your order.
I think people telling people's stories and then people hearing people's stories are incredibly powerful for both people. Like the person telling their story and then also the person hearing.
Well, you know, I'm a salesman through and through. And you know my siblings, so you know how we all are. Like we can fake it till you make it, like all the others. But at a certain point, like, you know, here I was in 2020. I had a fiance, a house, a dog. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina. I had a great job. And I was dealing with something.
24.
And I was 24. Yeah, like, I had my whole life ahead of me. And so, like, I was dealing with something. And no one knew about it until my attempt. Like, I know that there are more people out there that deal with worse circumstances than mine, like, but I don't necessarily know if they're getting the help that they need. And so what I want to do is just be a sounding board, like, you know, because I've had the thoughts and I'll tell you I've had the thoughts and it's okay to tell me if you've had the thoughts, but working through them is, and accepting them that you've had them is, that's the first step. But you know, I can only help someone if they want to be helped and want to help themselves, because it starts with you. Like, I'm responsible for everything I have done in the past 3 years. Like, my attempt, my second attempt, like, that is on me. And I acknowledge that now. But what I do going forward is also on me. And, you know, the truth isn't always easy. You know, I had to admit a lot of wrongdoings, like in the sense of, you know, not putting others before me and, you know, not acknowledging like some of the dark thoughts that I had. Yep. And I paid the price. And the last thing I think I want is for anyone to go through that.
With some of the resources and, you know, some of the things that you are now providing through your foundation, and I'm sure going to continue to provide more and greater resources,
But like you said, I mean, and I totally agree with you, there's definitely way more, the percentages, I'm not sure, but it's, I would say it's much higher that people have attempted and not told people. So we don't really know the true number, right?
Yeah.
If somebody has attempted and they've survived, what are some things you would suggest them do, or people they can reach out to, or resources they could find, or?
Yeah. You know, I didn't have a lot of resources, and that's part of the reason for starting it, is because, you know, part of the reason I knew nothing was out there about those that attempted and had to deal with it afterwards is that no one presented me with them. All I had was a therapist and a psychiatrist, and that's great. But I've also been in the shoes where, like, you don't tell your therapist everything.
Done that.
Yeah. I mean, like, it, you know, even if it's like, you're like, right, you don't tell them, and like, you hold back. And so it's just, I guess, like, the resources aspect are still, you know, we're, it's new. We're still growing. I have, actually, someone reached out to me about posting on our resources page. But the biggest thing is, you know, putting my story out there and, you know, kind of having people be comfortable with their own story.
Yep.
And that's the main thing, is like, golly, one of the most therapeutic things that I've ever done for myself is actually had to, like, write the stuff for that website.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, on the stories page, like, that's essentially a journal. Yeah. And it's not only for me, like, it's for anyone who wants to send me their stuff. And it can be as anonymous as possible. But if you type it out or write it out or just put it out to the world, even if you're not putting your name on it, you at least know that it's out there.
It's freeing in a way.
Yeah, it's very freeing, because, like, you know, I had a journal, and that was just to me. Like, no one read it, like, prior to my first attempt. But there is something to be said for, like, actually getting out there and just talking about it. And it does, I mean, it's not easy. Yeah. It's not going to come right away. But the more you're comfortable with what happened and the thoughts that are, no matter how deep down they are,
mm-hmm.
the thoughts that are there and the thoughts that are always going to be there, the better you can be.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up every day somewhat afraid that I'm going to be triggered.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know my trigger, but I also acknowledge that those thoughts are there. I'm aware of them, mm-hmm. and I do everything I can to try and not let them take hold.
With say somebody has attempted and they come to terms with it, and, you know, I think that would be a good thing for them, right? And they start to recognize they need to seek help. Do you think they should just tell, like, their mom, or seek professional help, you know, like?
Yeah, like,
for somebody, or
it's, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's one set path. If you have a therapist, if you have a psychiatrist that you can tell, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Almost tell anybody.
Just tell someone. Just make someone aware. I mean, for me, it was my mom. I mean, it's been with me since day one.
Yeah.
And
I would tell my mom.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. And, like, you know, you don't want your mom to worry, but at the end of the day, like, your mom's also just going to do everything she can to make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, tell a friend, like whoever is your closest person, just tell them,
mm-hmm.
just so they're aware, because don't ever think that you're a burden on them for telling them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a burden if you don't.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, just, if one person in the world knows about it, you've already doubled.
Yeah.
You've already doubled your support system.
How's the response been to the foundation?
It's been really great. You know, that whole day when I launched it, I was off because I don't work on that day anymore. And I read every single one of those comments, and, you know, it was some of the kindest things that I've ever heard. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, you know, guys don't necessarily like share their emotions, and like other guys aren't emotional with other people and they're like really good friends. But like,
sure,
that stuff gets to me. And, you know, it was very comforting to hear from me, but more importantly, the support that I got on that first day, donations, people reaching out about how they can help was just incredible. You know, today is Giving Tuesday, and we've already received a number of donations. And so, you know, I think 2024 is going to be a pretty special year. 2023 was a great year for launching, but I do think that 2024 is going to be pretty big.
What can people do to help? You know, like obviously financially, then other type of resources or things that they can do to help support the foundation and you know, you moving forward.
Yeah. Right now, you know, financial support is, of course, the most important, I would say, just because it's a new foundation.
Yep.
We're trying to get some legs underneath this. But yeah, I mean, financial support's always going to help. I think that, you know, as I said, 2024, there's going to be more opportunities for people to help out in a big way, whether that be volunteering at events and stuff like that. But, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, the stories aspect is, you know, I'm one person and, you know, I never want to put any pressure on anyone, but the more instances we have, is it validates what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And so I welcome any stories, any experiences, you know, anonymous, whatever, because
we're powerful.
Yeah. I mean, it can help me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm still kind of lonely in what I've experienced. I have a few people that are in my support group, but like, you know, there's a ton of people that understand what I've been through, and I can understand what others have been through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the main goal, is just bringing those two together.
Totally. Do you plan on like having events, or like what are some like the big ideas you have, say, moving forward?
Yeah. So I think our first event's probably going to be a joint venture with a restaurant in Charleston. Just to kind of get the word out. It'll probably be, yeah, like first January 2023, 2024. And then, you know, like I said before this, I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants. I'm learning as I go. I've never started a charity. So,
a lot of good resources.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So yeah, that's actually more support. If anyone can help me with running a foundation, that would be great. But no, I have a great team. I mean, you know, the girl, Caitlin Radecki, she did the website. Michael Parks is a good buddy of mine. He did the 501c3. Our Dubas's secretary, Mary Craig, helped with the logo. So, I mean, the support's there. It's just, you know, it's only, my hope is that it only gets bigger and that I need more help.
Yeah, you're totally right, man. And like you said, stories will totally help.
Yeah.
Because once you get people to tell their story, they'll get their community involved.
Yeah.
And they'll just naturally grow from there. Last story I want to hear is you talk about the Officer Taylor.
Yeah.
Who was one of the first responders to you that day.
Yeah.
Tell me about y'all's relationship and...
So yeah, that was actually a pretty special one, because I remember being in the store, and I was in the wheelchair at the time, and we were busy, and I was kind of going back and forth from both sides of our stores, and I kind of had my back to where the voice came from, but I just passed my boss, and I heard someone say, "Is that Clark?" And I heard him say, "Yeah." And I kind of turned around, and she was right there. And she was like, "I was here that day." And I was like, I was kind of like shocked and wanted to talk to her. And I was like, "Give me, like, just 5 seconds. And I ultimately got hung up, you know, with a customer or doing something else. And she left. And so I felt so bad. And she came in a few months later, full dress. She wasn't dressed. She wasn't in her uniform the first time. She came in a few months later. And yeah, she just kind of talked to me. She told me how, you know, she went to the hospital later that day. And just because of HIPAA, they couldn't tell her anything. And she said she didn't know whether I made it until she walked in and saw me sitting in a wheelchair. And she still to this day comes in, checks on me, gives us a hard time at the store, but she's a badass. She I think I posted that she's the only female motorcycle officer in the Lowcountry. So like she will mess you up, but no, she's a good one to have in my corner. So,
well, Clark, I'm proud of you, man. Like I said, stories are incredibly powerful, and I know this will help out so many people. I'll have all the links for everybody in the show notes, but thank you for joining me. Incredible conversation, powerful story, and it's only the beginning, man.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to it, man.
Thank you for listening. Give our partners some love by visiting their links in the show notes. Spink's Convenience Stores, you can find the location nearest you. Rebel Rabbit Seltzers, they're on a mission to socialize healthier and smarter, so join the mission. And Engineered Sleep, making the best mattresses in the game. You might as well be sleeping on an Engineered Sleep mattress. For me, if you could give our show a 5-star rating on your listening platform, that'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for listening.